We now have, where is she? Yes. Professor Galethorpe. She will talk about some of the sentencing aspects and then hand over to the next slide.
Unfamiliar setup here.
If you press F5.
Thank you very much. I want to talk about the rush to punishment in a way, drawing on a range of sources here, as well as the Ministry of Justice, statistics, and other data on sentencing. And I'm going to make some introductory remarks, and then Dexter Diaz will take over and add some comments before introducing the director of the film. Well, in the wake of the recent riots, much attention, I think, has been given to the causes of the riots, but an issue more recently at the forefront of press and public concern is the level of punishment being meted out to those convicted of riot-related offences. Reports of first offenders being convicted and imprisoned for thefts of items of very small value have raised questions, it seems to me, about the purposes of sentencing, the problems of giving exemplary sentences, and of inconsistency, as well as of the issue of political pressure on sentences. And the government has been emphasising the need for harsh punishment for riot-related offences, and this has been reflected in some very severe sentences for offenders with no previous convictions, including young offenders, and where offenders have pleaded guilty. So, I want to give attention to four particular issues. The spate of harsh sentences raises concerns about the consistency of sentencing between offenders convicted of theft and handling within and outside the context of the riots and between offenders sentenced for similar crimes in different courts. The Criminal Justice Act 2003, Section 142, stipulates five purposes of sentencing, including punishment, crime reduction, reform and rehabilitation of offenders, public protection, and making of reparation by offenders to those affected by their offences. Clearly, the primary purpose in sentencing those involved in the riots has been punishment, but on the desert theory of punishment within a desert framework. It's a desert framework which underpins the relevant sentencing provisions in the Act. And within that, the key principles are to treat offenders convicted of similar crimes with broadly similar punishments and to ensure that punishment satisfies the principle of proportionality. The custody rate, that is the percentage of defendants convicted who are given a custodial sentence, is much higher than normal for riot-related crimes. And the sentences themselves are also in many cases longer than usual, as Professor Lurzel has pointed out. There's also been an increase in the numbers being remanded in custody awaiting trial, even though the outcome of the trial may be a non-custodial sentence. So I think there are six things to think about in particular. First of all, the effect of the disparate response to the riots-related offences is arguably damaging to the legitimacy of the criminal justice system. I would also say it's short-sighted. If we unpick the reasoning behind the spate of exemplary sentences, they're designed as not-so-short, sharp shocks to deter offenders from future rioting and expressing public pressure, displeasure. Yet we know from research on deterrence that short prison sentences have limited effect in preventing reoffending, and half of those released from prison will reoffend within a year. And the reoffending rates are much higher for younger offenders too. The effect on young people of carrying a criminal record, and a prison record in particular, is also likely to be counterproductive in terms of access to employment. Serious offences, such as arson, will inevitably attract harsh sentences. But what has been most marked is the severity of the sentences at the lower end of the seriousness scale. Another point I want to make concerns victims. For victims of theft and criminal damage, it's possible that the prime concern will be compensation and restitution for their losses. And victims are not necessarily more punitive than others. They may also wish to confront the perpetrator to express the impact of the crime through restorative justice. A community punishment as opposed to custody, which focuses on offenders paying back to the community, could arguably be much more effective in some cases than simply containing people in prison. If the rationale is to satisfy public opinion, I think this is a very dangerous route, as catering to public punitiveness can legitimise and even increase this punitiveness and the public sphere of crime and make it harder to satisfy public concerns in the end. The anxieties of the public reflect what some commentators have described as ontological insecurity, a free-floating anxiety about social change, and this has now focused specifically on the scenes of looting and rioting. As the press, the media, has highlighted the burning and mayhem on the streets, it has focused these general anxieties over law and order on the depravity of the nation's youth. Moreover, research on public opinion suggests that while the public may want stronger sentences for serious crimes, they're more willing to consider alternatives to custody for less serious offences. And the work of Julian Roberts and Mike Huff in particular supports that. Finally, I think the public also has an interest in the cost effectiveness of punishment. And with the prison population at its highest recorded level, it's difficult to justify the enormous expense of custodial sentences for relatively minor offences. The Prime Minister's concern to punish and to be seen to punish highlights, I think, the perennial tensions facing governments in showing the public that they're tough on law and order while seeking to cut the costs of the criminal justice system. But it's very difficult to justify exemplary sentences within a desert framework as they violate the retributivist demands for proportionality, parity, and equality. But it's also hard to defend them on utilitarian grounds as they don't satisfy the requirement for cost-effective punishment. And at that point, I will hand over to Dexter.